On this episode of the Orville Universe podcast, we're talking about Season 1, Episode 5, Priya. We're talking about relationships and jealousy, time travel, and is taking someone's leg away a relevant practical joke?
All that right after this. Welcome to the Orville Universe podcast. My name is Matthew Carroll.
I'm Matthew S. Fox.
What's happening, Matthew?
Not too much. The unpacking has finished. If our fans have noticed, we're a bit slow with episodes these last couple weeks. It's because I have just moved from Wisconsin to Minnesota. And I actually recorded an episode for my other podcast 2 days ago. And 10 minutes before the podcast started, we realized I did not know what box my headphones were in. So that was exciting. But as of today, all the boxes are empty. The new house is set up. My recording area is set up. And I'm ready to go.
That's awesome. Because I use a lot of my gear for music as well as podcasting, you would be surprised. Even though I have not moved in 7 years, every once in a while – or no, not every once in a while – like. Pretty commonly, I'm missing something.
It's cable. Like it's still in the van or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I stole it to use for that wedding gig. Oh, no, where's that cable? happens to me at least once a month. I'm frantically running around the house trying to get ready for a podcast.
Yeah, I can see that. Well, and the best part was I thought I was going to have to watch this episode of The Orville on my phone, but last night I got my TV all set up, got the Roku set up so I could watch the it's the first thing I got to watch on my TV in my new office was
nice.
Was this episode. So, yeah, looking forward to talking about it.
Yeah, me too. Let's dive in.
And I was thinking, actually, because I know some of our listeners are hopefully watching the show along with us, but I've heard, you know, from some of my friends I know who are listening, and I'm sure some of other fans, are people who've probably seen these episodes and are excited to hear them talked about, but maybe haven't seen the episode in a year or so. So, Matt, you want to give a quick summary of what happens in this episode?
Sure, I can do that, I think. So this is the episode where we get a huge guest star in Charlize Theron, and she shows up. She is a scientist on a mining colony that is on a comet heading toward a sun. They save her life. It appears she's just a damsel in distress, and they save her. They bring her aboard. Ed starts to fall for her. Kelly gets jealous. She's suspicious of her, and then it turns out she's able to save the ship. Charlize Theron's character Priya is able to come to the bridge and save the ship. And then shortly thereafter, they discover that she has hacked into their navigational array, and they find out that she admits it, that she is from the future, and that the reason she's on the ship is because she's a future antiques collector, and what she does is go back in time to places where a ship should be destroyed, remove that ship from the timeline, and bring it to the future. And so they are to be their ship is to be scrapped as an antique in the future, and
right.
the crew is to live out their lives in the future. And they end up fighting her, basically tricking her into letting them go. Or actually, what they end up doing is capturing her and then they go to the 29th century for a moment, come back, and then they defeat her, and then Ed does some time travel chicanery so that she never existed in their timeline, and she just disappears. But what I don't understand about that, which we'll get into, is why he remembers her. But that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, I think the topic of time travel is one that we'll be talking about a good deal for this episode. That's kind of a great summary. And what are your general thoughts on this episode?
My general thoughts are it's probably with the exception of Charlize Theron being in it, and it was another moment similar to what we had a couple weeks ago with Liam Neeson showing up, where I was like, damn, this show can get like people in it. The episode itself is pretty thin. One of the things we always like to talk about on the show is moral questions, and I feel like there's not much there.
Yeah.
And particularly the one sort of moral thing they bounce around is the jealousy of Kelly, and she ends up being right, which I feel like sort of undercut the moral question that they were asking.
Right. Yeah, I think I would disagree there a little bit. I think there is some, and it's one of the main topics I want us to get and discuss. I think the way that they handle both Kelly and Ed's sort of feelings and the trouble they have, like, keeping straight their mixed up feelings about each other and about this other woman and how all that plays out with their professional responsibilities, I think it's handled kind of clumsily, but I do think there's some interesting questions it raises. But certainly I agree with you that, to me, a lot of the most interesting questions this episode raises, I don't think it meant to raise, which I think is kind of a disappointment given some of the other episodes we've seen.
Yes.
This is, I thought it was fine, but, you know, if I was going to sit down with someone and say, here are the three episodes I want you to watch to convince you this is a good show, this is not one of the ones I'd pick.
I agree. I think this is a part of the season one growing pains that we're going to go through. They still don't fully know what they want to be, and some episodes are going to be more fleshed out than others. And this feels like an adventure story more than a good episode of Star Trek, which is what The Orville is when it's at its best, you know?
Yeah. I will say just a couple of kind of small things that I noted in the episode but that I really was happy with. The fact that can you open this jar of pickles has just become kind of a running joke between now not just the captain but most of the crew and Alara as like, hey, can you be super strong and help us do something we can't do? I really love that.
Yeah, I liked the jar of pickles thing. I gotta say, on a first watch, I didn't notice it was a catchphrase, which is real silly of me. I remembered it from the first episode, but mostly because it was in the trailer for the first episode, I think.
Right.
And then I guess he uses it. This is maybe the second or third time he's used it.
I think it's the third time since then. But you're right. I hadn't remembered it from my first watch, and I'm wondering if maybe this is one of the like it's not gone back to after this.
Yeah. Well, there is a big reference to it later in the show.
That's true.
And so when that happened, I was like, oh, cute, a reference to the first episode. I hadn't noticed that it was a reference to a running thing they had, and I feel kind of dumb for not realizing that.
Mm-hmm.
But on a rewatch, I'm seeing it, that he says it all the time, apparently.
Yep. I also, and this is just my own personal thing, but I was in a high school production of The Crucible, which is a play about the Salem witch trials. A set of witch trials related to Salem, but the moment in the where they're talking about going to that holographic museum and they talk about Giles Corey saying more weight. I played that part in the high school play, so I had a happy little moment of yeah, it's a good line.
Yeah, that's funny. That's funny.
Uh-huh.
That was cute. The whole. A holographic reproduction of that instead of it being, you know, actors or whatever.
Right.
It's kind of cute to think about all these, like an old-time Williamsburg or whatever, but full of holograms.
Right. Like, what would technology do with the, but we still have the same historical reenactment.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of fun to, it's fun to kind of not just say what they're doing on the starship, but what does Earth look like with all this technology?
Right.
That's kind of a fun little thing to drip in there, because we see that on Star Trek, but it's just always San Francisco. We always see San Francisco, and that's the Federation headquarters, and that's all we ever see.
Unless Deep Space Nine, in which case we see one particular restaurant in New Orleans.
That's right.
Yeah, but that's it.
And it still looks like Federation headquarters. Like and that's probable. I mean, that's not an unlikely scenario that the world becomes more and more homogenized by Starfleet, and it all just looks like that.
Definitely. So let's actually get into some of the real questions this episode. So the relationships and jealousy, you obviously had some thoughts about that. What was kind of your take on how that whole storyline played out?
Well, I felt like just from their reactions, I felt like Ed was being naive.
Yeah.
But Kelly was really crossing lines that I felt like were clearly not duty related.
Right.
She seemed jealous in a way that seemed toxic and unhealthy. And then when you're building a show like this, it's your job to build the world and make the decisions that make people make decisions retroactively look good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
And it made all of her sort of toxic jealousy stuff sort of validated.
So I had a somewhat different take on it. I think the episode was trying to do something but didn't do it very well. For the first sort of half of the episode, what I was getting from it was that both Kelly and Ed each were basically letting their personal feelings about what was happening and their personal feelings about each other like color their actual perceptions of things, you know, and that Kelly was being somewhat jealous and that was making her suspicious, and Ed was being very sensitive to any possibility of jealousy plus his own feelings for Priya, and so he was refusing to listen to anything she said.
That's a good point.
And I thought there was a really interesting tension there, and to me it kind of highlights the idea of you know, that this is why it's actually a really bad idea for people who have to work in close relationships like that to get where they really have to be able to trust each other's perceptions to become personally involved or to have past baggage, because it means that, like, it's very difficult to have that kind of a situation without there being a personal bias one way or the other.
Absolutely.
I think you're right that by the end of the episode, it is so clear that Kelly was right and Ed was wrong that it, like, I wish the episode had been able to make the point of they were both wrong, even if Kelly's suspicions wound up being accurate, that they were still both somewhat in the wrong in how they handled it. I think the episode didn't go into that much depth, and instead we were just left with Kelly was right all along and Ed was wrong all along. To me, I agree with you, it didn't fit with how over the line Kelly's jealousy was. And not even that she was wrong to feel jealous, but the, like, you know, convincing Alara to break regulations and to put her own career at risk. And
I feel like she needed consequences for her snooping actions. Like, there needed to be, and I mean, I guess there were slight consequences. She got busted and, you know, Alara gets reprimanded officially or whatever. But, like, it just felt like she got off scot-free for crossing lines. Whereas, I guess you could say he crossed lines as well, trusting Priya the way he did. And not questioning, not listening to his first officer. It just seemed like it picked a side. And it made me feel like the show wasn't taking that as a moral question seriously, and it was just meant to be sort of relationship building between them, which it does that job, but that just made it feel sort of like a cheap melodrama, like cheap romance melodrama, instead of really taking seriously their duties as captain and first officer.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense, and I think because that's, I feel like that's a trope that we get on shows all the time, and I really appreciated that here we were getting, like, here's the danger of that kind of thing, because, you know, there is going to be moments where, I guess to me, whether Priya turns out to be completely evil and terrible, or completely legitimate and fine, both Ed and Kelly are somewhat in the wrong, you know, and I kind of wish that had been, there'd been more of an understanding of whatever the truth about Priya, you know. Because on some level, like, for Kelly, if this had been someone who no one was interested in, it is Kelly's job to be a little bit more suspicious and to look into things. You know, having a total stranger come on board and Kelly deciding to look up the manifold of the staff list of the place that this person's claiming to come from, like, that's totally legitimate.
Yeah, absolutely.
Trying to then, like, break into their quarters to search for stuff with that, you know, it's that's where it kind of goes off the rails. And I think that's the, like, I like that exploration of where's the line between your personal feelings and your professional. And frankly, I think that's one we talk about a lot. I know you guys talk about it a lot in the MCU. We talk a lot about it on my Superhero Ethics podcast of, you know, when you have this larger duty, but you also have personal feelings, where are those lines?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the big things that this is pointing out is the flaw in the current crew, which is the first officer and the captain don't trust each other. I think the exploration that's happening is we have a first officer and captain that love each other and are hurt by each other and don't trust each other. And that makes it an interesting tension, because you really need your captain and first officer to trust each other. If your first officer comes to you with a problem, you need to not be questioning their motivations behind that.
Especially since one of the biggest roles for an executive officer, for first officer, is to point out when the captain's perceptions may not be fully accurate. You know, and so for the captain to have, in which case, in this instance, that's completely what was happening. You know, the degree to which Ed trusts Priya and hands things over to her without thinking about how contrived this whole situation seems is really inappropriate. But because Kelly is compromised with some for some degree of legitimacy in Ed's eyes, he's not able to see that, and so the communication just breaks down on both sides.
Right. And that same legitimacy is lost in her eyes for him because she thinks he's being, you know, swayed by this woman, which he, I guess, is.
Oh, yeah.
But they both are. They're both wrong, and it leads to the crew putting the crew in danger. Well, I say that. They're both wrong, and it leads to the crew being saved, which, I don't know. This is an interesting episode in that, if you think about it, whatever timeline is created by this is completely different going forward, especially, you know, again, without spoilers, the Orville takes part in some pretty big things for the universe going forward.
Yeah.
And, like, the Orville should not exist past now.
Yeah, so let's get into the time travel of it.
Okay, let's do it.
There's definitely some questions there. Because you're right, and just starting with that question is, I mean, obviously everything that Priya's character is doing seems pretty terrible and awful, except she's also rescuing them. And, like, yeah, so that's an interesting place. Is, like, is what she's doing actually wrong?
I don't think so. I think it's more morally questionable to destroy her timeline, which is what they do.
Right.
And they act like they're not doing that. They act like there'll never be a reason for you to come back here. And that's what they do. But it's... that's not the case. Like, at least, it all depends on what form of time travel you're talking about. But as far as I'm concerned, he destroyed her timeline. That's why she disappears. He Marty McFly'd her.
Yeah. And I'll admit, this episode is a perfect example of why, for the most part, I hate time travel in these kind of stories. Because I think if it's something like Back to the Future or Doctor Who, where they so clearly say, we don't care about the rules. We're asking you not to care about the rules. Let's just tell a fun story. I'm fine with it.
Mm.
But here, where they set up moral questions based on the realities of time travel, whatever those might be, I've never seen a story be really consistent about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the fact that here, once again, you know, I'm not sure about, like, especially because. You know, I mean, we talked a lot in an earlier episode about, like, doing the right thing for the wrong reasons. Here, she absolutely has no, you know, sort of moral drive to save the crew. She's doing it purely for her own reasons. But she does save their lives. But then, and so that's morally questionable in and of itself. But also then to remove that, once you establish that these artifact hunters are doing this on a regular basis, now you're fundamentally changing things both about the past and about the future.
Well, you could be completely destroying the future. You know, you have no idea.
Right.
The fact that the human race has survived the next 400 to 500 years and is putting artifacts in museums and honestly going back and saving people from all, I really wish they'd wrestled with that a little bit more.
Yeah.
That's the real meat of this episode, or at least it should have been, and it just turned into an action episode.
I mean, think about, this is just one small thing, but, like, they make an offhand reference to the idea that someone saved Amelia Earhart.
Yeah.
Think about how many, like, people got into like, aviation or science or things like that, like, because they were fascinated by the mystery of what happened to Amelia Earhart, you know? And, like, I'm not saying that's a huge cultural moment, but certainly there is some cultural impact to the fact that, you know, Amelia Earhart disappeared and no one knows what happened, and that mystery has motivated a lot of other people to make decisions.
Right.
Now, all of a sudden we're saying, actually, if we remove that whole timeline from existence, now probably someone finds Amelia Earhart's plane crashed and finds her dead body.
Possibly.
It's a small thing, but that probably, I mean,
Does that change history in some way? I think the idea is they only do this for ships that aren't found, because they're trying not to change the timeline. That, like, they're trying to, even Priya talks about how that's her, you know, she's not supposed to change the timeline, so she goes back, and they were supposed to die and be, I guess, utterly obliterated in that dark matter storm, and so they go back to ships that are never heard from again and remove them from the timeline. And because even removing, say, Amelia Earhart's plane, if she was supposed to be found a few years later, and like you said, it changes the cultural moment instead of her just disappearing. So I think, like, her just disappearing always should have happened. It's just that they go back and stop that from happening and just remove her from the timeline.
Yeah. But there again, like you said, I wish they'd explored that more, because that seems the kind of thing where if everyone is always doing that perfectly and it's being very well enforced, sure. But, like, if it's all people who are doing this out for profit, like, I can imagine that those rules kind of get bent somewhat, and what are the consequences, you know? And
yeah.
You said, we never explore that. Like,
See, we just wrote a better episode. Maybe he decides to just go with it because he realizes she actually did save the crew's life. They're actually doing a very moral thing. And maybe, like, from the moment she's presented, instead of making her feel like a pirate, we make her feel like a savior. And then you have this, like, oh, well, but then they could deal with the idea that, oh, it's actually for profit, and there's actually some darker stuff going on at times. And,
right.
You know, maybe we're going to end up in a, you know, at part of the exhibit or whatever. Like, you know, then give them a reason to fight, because this seemed actually like a pretty good thing she did.
Yeah.
And you know what? This actually reminds me of, we talked about a couple episodes about Ed being sort of impetuous with big decisions when he
that
opens
exactly
the
where
skylight.
I was going, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So this is the same thing. This is Ed deciding, without really considering it or going back and forth with it, he just decides, we're going to do what we want to do. We're going to save our lives and maintain our timeline instead of, even though you just saved our lives, even though, as far as we can tell, there's no real downside to going to the future except for us leaving, which we should have been dead anyway.
Right. And I think what she did has good consequences. I think what she's doing has, you know, it's an interesting thing because it's that question of, like, is it the intention of the action or the action itself? The action itself does a good thing, but she's doing it purely for her own profit. I think what concerns me about Ed's action especially is it's the same thing. If we had seen him, like, you know what would have made this episode so good is if he had sat down and talked to Kelly, and on this issue they had really listened to each other. Because part of my concern, frankly, is how much is Ed doing this because he is has made a conscious, ethical, scientific decision that closing this wormhole is the best idea? Or is Ed doing this because he is carrying around so much bitterness because in his mind the woman he loved betrayed him, and now he has for the first time since then allowed himself to be intimate with a woman again, and in his mind that woman has betrayed him again.
Mm.
And, like, to me, I look at that as I don't think Ed is in any way emotionally capable of making this decision because – and even the way he does it, it seems to be he's basically telling – you know, it's kind of an F you to her. You know, like, mm-hmm. You try to screw us over, we got you, and we're just going to wipe this all from existence. Even if there would be some legitimate reason for him doing that, it's hard for me to believe that he could separate that from his very valid emotional hurt.
I think this is, again, the problem with season one of this show. They're trying to keep it light. They're really trying to keep it light for the most part. And I think this would have been a much more interesting and valuable episode if at the end of this episode, the choice is, if you close this rift, I'm never going to be able – like Priya presented as, if you close that rift, we're never going to be able to save anyone again.
Right.
Because that's what he's doing. He's erasing all of the people they've saved. And
I mean, now Amelia Earhart doesn't get to live in the 29th century and she just dies.
That's right.
Does that have any moral consequence?
That's horrible. and then he has to actually make the decision, well, I have to worry about my crew and their lives, and I have to choose whether to maintain all of our lives or maintain – and that's a selfish decision, but it's a decision that's understandable. From a human context, like, I can't sacrifice my crew's life on the word of a 29th century time traveler. And, like, I might be killing other crews on other ships, but those crews I can't see and I don't trust you.
Well, and here also is where, and this is something that also kind of drives me insane. There's an urgency to time travel stories often that makes absolutely no sense. Because the fact is, once the Orville knows this wormhole is here, they could spend 20 years having scientific and ethical discussions about the consequences of doing this, and then at the end of the 20 years, the Union sends someone to blow up the wormhole, and the result is the exact same. You know?
Like, truth.
So, yeah, it just – the other thing, I think this is kind of what you're getting at, and this is something I see in the Orville, but frankly I see it happen a lot in shows like this, is – you know, I said a long time ago that part of what I like is that what a show like this tries to do is to say, let's come up with some science fiction-y scenario that allows us to explore an interesting issue.
Yep.
In this case, the issue is like the jealousy between Ed and Kelly and how they make decisions. The problem is what those shows will sometimes do is that they will create a scenario that does that, where the scenario actually raises much bigger questions that they don't want to tackle because they're trying to deal with the main issue.
See, and I disagree. I think the way this episode is written, it uh-huh. is not let's look at a more issue we want to tackle and create a storyline that tackles it. It's, hey, I got a time travel idea. And now let's kind of shove in these other moral issues. Like the jealousy is just part of the character development throughout the seasons, I think. Like uh-huh. I don't think they when they set this up, they were like, we need a character to show up that Ed has to make a decision about. Like, it was more like, hey, here's a cool time travel idea. Let's play with time travel. We can do that. We're a science fiction show. Instead of what you're talking about, which is like building a moral story because...
Yeah, no, that's probably, I'm probably giving them too much credit.
I mean, and I don't think you're giving too much credit on a lot of their episodes that they do, but this one felt very, sort of genre first instead of character first or story first.
Yeah, they created a scenario, and they wanted to ask one or two questions of that scenario without looking at all the other stuff, without really thinking it through in a larger picture.
You know what I would have liked this to end, this little bat? Well, this doesn't make sense either. See, I'm getting my own self tied up in knots thinking about time travel, because I was thinking, like you said, they have all the time to, you know, to go back and fix things. What if right before he blows up the wormhole... a ship comes from behind and it's like a future Priya or something, a la like Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, because she also has the time travel and she could just be like, no, I'm planning to take you out, you know, stop you from destroying the wormhole. So I'm going to stop you from destroying the wormhole.
Right.
Like those kinds of silly, like, I love that. To me, there's only two times of time travel that work for me, and it's the multiverse theory, where every time you make a travel, you are changing uh-huh. the past. That's the Back to the Future model. It's the model that most things use. Right. And then there is the other model, which is time is fixed, and everything you do to change it, you are still existing within what has already happened. So if you try to change something, you can't actually change it. You can visit the past. You can even have effects on the past, but those effects have always been there. You can't actually change anything. This is kind of a weird mushy middle that never makes sense to me.
Yeah, and I'll admit those latter ones are ones that often I really don't like, because especially if it's that last thing you talked about where it's the, you know, John, the guy goes back in time. You know, John Connor's friend goes back in time in order to become John Connor's father. Like, and so, like, the future could have never existed unless the future went back to the past and then created the future. And just that whole time loop, I just feel it's such nonsense.
Right.
Much as I love Terminator, which I'm referencing in this particular instance.
I do love Terminator. But Terminator's another one that's a mushy middle. It's like, well, Terminator's a whole different thing. Terminator is one of those like bucket of knots that, because you just, everything they do, they create a divergent timeline. And so the thing you have to realize is that's not the first time that's all happened in Terminator 1, because obviously John Connor is going to exist. So it's like a weird, yeah.
Yeah,
it's all very timey-wimey.
It just makes my brain hurt. But let's move on to the last kind of big topic that we talked about for this episode, which is the use of humor. What did you think about? Because honestly, this was definitely the C plot. And for anyone who don't remember, there's a running thing where we realize early that Isaac doesn't really understand the idea of practical jokes and basically kind of Schadenfreude humor. Isaac is like, isn't this just sadistic to laugh at someone else's pain? And Malloy decides he wants to teach Isaac about practical jokes, and so he does a thing where he basically glues a whole bunch of Mr. Potato Head pieces to Isaac's head, And then he sort of challenges Isaac to be like, okay, now you do a practical joke to me. And so Isaac finds a way in the middle of the night without causing Malloy any pain to cut off his leg. And Malloy is upset, and then later Malloy is like, you know what, honestly, that was a really good practical joke. What was your take on that whole plot line and the stuff it explored?
I liked it. I liked it a lot. I like it even more given something maybe we can do a slight spoiler discussion about after we do this. But just to touch on it before I get into that, I thought the joke was really funny. I thought both practical jokes worked really well. I know that one was horrifying to the crew, but I thought it was beautiful because Isaac knows that they can fix his leg and regenerate it or put it back on.
Right.
And it was a good running gag, and the Mr. Potato Head gag was really funny too. I don't understand how his sensors don't pick up a bunch of Mr. Potato Head pieces on his face, but
that did seem a little odd to me for sure. I thought if we're just supposed to view it as practical joking, I thought both jokes were funny. I thought there were two kind of questions that I walked away from it with, and both where I was like, either the show is being very smart and very subtle, or they weren't at all going for this, and I just read into it. But either way, there are two kind of interesting things it explores. One is just the question that Isaac asks at the beginning of, isn't this kind of humor somewhat sadistic, to basically, like, take pleasure in someone else suffering? And I thought that was a really interesting point, and also a very interesting point for Seth MacFarlane to be asking. Because I did wonder, you know, I haven't seen much of Family Guy and stuff like that, but I know that a lot of those shows and a lot of his humor is based on, you know, pratfalls and, like, other, you know, people getting to enjoy other people, not, like, dying, but, you know, having mild suffering. And I thought there was an interesting little thing about Seth MacFarlane having that line in one of his shows. The other thing, though, is it made me wonder, like, on some level, what Malloy does to Isaac and what Isaac does to Malloy, I can understand, especially from Isaac's perspective, are very similar because they're both about significantly altering someone else's body.
Right.
And it did make me wonder if part of the reason why we are horrified about what happens to Malloy is because on some level Malloy is human and Isaac is not. Because
yes, I think that is the case. Yeah. Well, also, the severity of the thing. I mean, those magnets are easily removable, and right. it's just a funny look, having a leg. But that's the thing. In this future, with their technology, that leg is apparently easily replaceable, and it seems like there's no pain involved even. So it seems like he does it painlessly, and there really isn't much of a difference. My favorite thing about this entire thing is that at the end, Malloy admits that it was a really good joke.
Yeah.
Because Malloy's mad in the moment because he's freaked out, but like, he's such a humor loving character that he has to admit when he's been gotten. And I thought that was pretty great.
Yeah. And I do like, to that extent, I mean, to me, I think one of the worst parts of it is the non-consensuality of things like this. And you can argue, does Isaac really consent? But I think there's at least some understanding of Isaac saying, like, I want to learn more about this, and Malloy taking that at, because I think, as consent. And, like, I wish Isaac had more clearly said, I'm open to it. But the fact that Malloy very specifically says, now you get to do that to me, like, because I think that's one of the things that I find most problematic, and as Isaac says, sadistic about that kind of humor sometimes, is when the person does not in any way say, yeah, go ahead and play a practical joke on me. When instead it's there's none of that discussion. And so I do at least, I like that idea of the framework of these people are agreeing to do these kind of things to each other, even if as what happens is Malloy never actually quite says, here's what is an acceptable practical joke and here's what's not. And so Isaac thinking that's acceptable makes perfect sense.
Yeah, totally. I think that just to talk about the general what jokes are okay, this is a line that is always played with, and it's a really hard line to walk, and obviously people get in trouble for things all the time, saying the wrong thing. And I think that certain jokes require closeness with the person and understanding. Right. And I don't think I think that if, say, when they were going through the academy, Ed had taken his leg,
mm-hmm.
that would have been a lot better accepted. I think part of it is that he's the other, that Isaac is the other, and that it feels more sadistic because he doesn't have the empathy for what is it like to lose a leg.
Right. Well, and you can say, oh, he doesn't have the empathy, but also we have no idea what is it like for a robot, you know, to realize that things have been done outside his ability to sense that are... It might be that he doesn't care in the slightest. I mean, he doesn't have any emotions, so there is no sense of, like, being really bothering to him. But yeah, I think it's an interesting question about joking in general of that there's a real danger of saying, well, I know that this would only be somewhat bad for me, so it's an okay joke to play on someone else. You know, you hear right. about a lot of the sort of worst examples of practical jokes going wrong are where, like, you know, I jump out and scare you because I don't realize that 5 years ago you were attacked in a very similar way, and now I've triggered your PTSD in a way that I never thought of, or that kind of thing, you know? And
right.
that's, you know, when you have two totally different species with fundamentally different moral understandings and just relationships to their own. Because I think part of it is, and actually this is an interesting thought that I hadn't connected to here, part of what you're exploring here is the connection that both Isaac and Malloy have to their own body. This had to be intentional, because now I think of it, this is a lot smarter than I thought. At a later point in the episode, Isaac is very comfortable being completely disconnected from his own body and just being downloaded into the computer.
That's true.
I wonder if part of that, what that's saying, is that part of it is that Isaac has much less of a... He doesn't have any kind of sentimental connection to his own body, and so he assumes Malloy doesn't either.
Man, you've just made me like this episode a lot more, because that is very
right?
thoughtful. I like this episode fine, and that part, that running joke, is probably my favorite part of the episode. But
yeah.
making the final battle tie into the C-plot in that way... In a thematic way, which again I don't know if they did that on purpose or not, but if they did, it's very smart.
Yeah, it's possible we're giving McFarlane far too much credit, but I'm hoping that was intentional, because if so, it's that makes it really smart.
It does. And again, I think that joking in general has to do with closeness, like what jokes are okay. It has to do with joking makes you vulnerable. Like when you mm-hmm. are the butt of a joke, it makes you vulnerable, and so making a joke to someone you don't know well is a bad thing. Putting them in a vulnerable place when they're in a space that is not safe for them.
Right.
I have close friends who I can say almost anything to, and they know me. They kind of know my heart, and they know that I love them. And I can say
right.
very mean things, make fun of physical flaws or whatever, and they know that I love them. And they can do the same thing, and we know that that's okay, and we've discussed it and know it's okay. But it's sort of like, you know, just consent for anything. But the thing about a joke, the thing that's tough is humor requires surprise. Humor requires a little bit of, like, you don't expect this to come. It's dancing along the lines of what's okay. That's what makes it funny sometimes. And so you have to be careful. You have to be careful to joke with people that you know them well enough to accept your jokes. But the problem is no one
right.
knows anyone, really. No one knows what's going on in another person's brain.
Yeah, it's kind of what I was saying about consent being important, because like in groups of friends like you're talking about, you can get to a point of of comfort with each other that there is a level of assumed consent. But
mm-hmm.
everyone is basically assuming that I give you consent because you know what my limits are. No one's actually said what those limits are, and there's always the possibility of going too far.
Yeah.
But I'll acknowledge the flip side of this. Like, when I was in high school, we always had what was called senior prank day, which was the last day of classes. It was one of the last days where the senior class was sort of allowed to do some kind of major prank to the school. And my understanding was that for a while that had always been a thing, and there was always a sort of like unspoken agreement of like what was or wasn't acceptable. But that it kept getting pushed further and further until some like actual damage was done and some unsafe things were happened. And so now this, like about 3 years before I was a senior, the school administration started putting in like, here's the official rules of what is and is not okay as a senior prank. Even to the point where they were like, you know what, my year, they were like, so this area, it was like this set of tables in the school lobby we're planning to get rid of. So if it's a prank that involves those being destroyed and removed, that's fine. And it just felt so anticlimactic, you know? And
yeah.
like, there was no... Because it was. It was completely expected. There was no humor to it anymore. There was no surprise to it. And it just all felt like a bad joke.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think that's... It's funny. I think McFarlane especially is a good person to be exploring this because he's someone who did really push the bounds of humor. And like I find, I've never really gotten into like Family Guy and stuff. I do think Ted is a fantastic movie. I love Ted.
Really?
Ted's also a very offensive movie in a lot of ways.
I haven't seen Ted. That makes me want to see it more.
It's. I mean, there's a lot of really great humor in it. And there's a lot of things that make you go like, I'm not sure I like that. But that's. I think because of that, like I feel like. As Seth MacFarlane like matures, he's a great person to explore some of these questions of humor. And I'm not sure exactly where he was going in this episode, and we get some of it, not too much in the next couple seasons, but I would love to see some more episodes that really explore kind of the ethics of humor.
Yeah. That is a great point. I think that's my favorite part of this episode, the fact that they're exploring that.
Yeah.
And it's just good humor requires some sort of transgression, like crossing, right. You have to cross a line for it to really be funny. And I think like we have a whole genre of jokes that don't, and those are called dad jokes.
Yeah.
Like a really safe joke. That's all you mean when you say dad joke, kind of. It's like play on words, da 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 da. But like good humor that really hits you in the belly is like, oh, he crossed a line. Like, it's you're hitting spots. And it's such a strange thing because humor, that kind of humor makes life worth living in some respects. Like, I love that.
Yeah.
But it is dangerous. It's inherently dangerous.
And, like, and there's been some great writing about this, like, the whole concept of punching up versus punching down, which is the idea of, like, you know, poking some fun and maybe playing with those lines a little bit while talking about those who have more sort of social power than you do versus,
yeah.
like, you know, people with social power, like, you know, it's kind of the difference between, like, you know, transgressive humor versus bullying.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so there's a whole can of worms there. I will also just say, just as a personal thing, so small, and I have no idea if they know this is a thing or if they just, that's how they wrote it. I'm an amputee. I think I've mentioned this before. I have my knee, but I'm amputated below my knee. And I should use crutches to get around the house most of the time when I have my leg off, and I try to when I can. But honestly, a lot of the time, you know, if I'm lying in bed, I don't want to put my leg on, but I need to run to the bathroom for a second, I just hop. And the fact that Malloy hops to the bridge without trying to get crutches when he realizes it, he just hops in. They make no reference to it, but I had such a moment of like, yes, that is exactly what that person would do in that situation, and I'm so glad they showed that.
That's awesome.
Tiny little thing, but I love it.
That's really awesome. You know, you had mentioned that you're an amputee on a previous episode, and so I didn't know that about you. And when you were talking about senior pranks, I thought you were going to say someone stole your leg, and I was like, how did you not bring that up first when we're talking about this episode? Like, you've had your leg stolen? Really? That's a huge personal connection to this episode.
No, nothing like that. Yeah, no, I was part of a senior prank that went really wrong. That's how I lost it. No, I lost my leg after college, so good deal later. I have had, like, girlfriends and stuff who hid the leg in the house somewhere, which would seem a lot worse to me than it is, except for the fact that, especially when I've lived in big houses that have a number of floors, I am a fairly absent-minded person. So the frequency with which, having nothing to do with alcohol or any other illicit substances, I wake up in the morning and realize I have no idea where in the house my leg is not, unfortunately, completely infrequent.
That is great, man. That is a wonderful, wonderful thing.
Anyway, on that moment of me and Malloy connecting, do you have any other kind of last wrap-up thoughts, or do you want to move us towards the end?
Well, just talking about the same thing, I think that sort of thing that allows you to be transgressive like that, it elicits a certain closeness. Like you talk about girlfriends, being able to do it, I think,
yeah.
like elicits closeness. We joke that we like friends who can kind of take a joke. But I think mm-hmm. part of that is we know they're friends because they can take a joke from us sometimes.
Right. They can take or they can give. I mean, not to even make it too serious, but like for me, I appreciate that random strangers don't, you know, laugh at my disability. But I really appreciate that once my friends know that it's okay, that they do have fun. Like, point, you know, I have a friend who calls me Hopalong Cassidy, you know, and like, I like that because it shows a level of comfort, you know, and that's, it's something we actually talked about a while ago in terms of Fat Thor and Endgame and all that, and all the questions that go into that. And that there's all sorts of levels you can go into about humor and about when does people know it's okay both to joke with someone and to receive a joke.
Yeah. I'm such a believer in jokes that I know that I probably have more – I have more of an affection for jokes than I have a – proper respect for the danger involved. That's not true. Uh-huh. Especially being a podcaster, I'm constantly aware of the danger involved.
Yeah.
It's so easy to say the wrong thing. And I can context switch between this joke's okay for this friend who knows me and knows that I don't mean it, or knows that, you know, I'm not, don't want to hurt them and that I love them or whatever. But it's not okay on the podcast. Yeah.
I mean, I'll give an example. I had a group of friends. I got, invited to play poker with in Madison, and I started playing with them regularly. They're a great bunch of guys, and there was one person in the group who the first time I was playing with them made a joke that, without knowing anything about him, this being fairly early in the time, came across as really kind of homophobic and like making fun of gay people. 'Cause it basically was kind of a joke about, like, you know, how he had lost the hand. I later realized that he is very, very out about being gay with his friends and is very comfortable laughing about his own homosexuality in that kind of way, in the kind of, like, when they're joking around as guys together. When I met him, I had no idea about that about him, and I was like, what the hell is happening here? So I think that was an interesting moment of, like, as you said, you know, your friends who know you well know the things you can get away with. In a similar way, like, I will make references to myself as a disabled person using language that is kind of, you know, kind of disability equivalent to the N-word, you know, like, I shouldn't be using it if I wasn't a disabled person. Until someone pointed out that I made a comment like that when I was at a game store wearing my prosthetic leg, and there were people around who couldn't tell that I was disabled. And that was a real moment of, like, oh, yeah, no, I need to be more thoughtful about that. And it's just, yeah, we could probably do a whole episode just on sort of the ethics of humor in a show like this, because there's so much to explore about humor. And I think for far too long, there's been a sense of, like, oh, it's just a joke, so it's okay to be racist or sexist or homophobic. And I'm glad we're getting to a point where, and even in the show, that they're exploring that a lot more.
Yeah. I was